Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the first canto, chapter 6, text 32. Deva datam imam vinam swada brahma vibhushitam murchayatva harikatam gayamana charami aham. Devadattam imam vinam. Devadattam imam vinam. Swada brahma vibhushitam. Swada brahma vibhushitam. Murchayatva harikatam. Murchayatva harikatam. Gayamanas charami aham. Gayamanas charami aham. Devadattam imam vinam. Swara brahma vibhushitam. Murchayatva harikatam. Gayamanas charami aham. Deva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Datam, gifted by. Imam, this. Vinam, a musical stringed instrument. Swara, singing meter. Brahma, transcendental. Babushitam, decorated with Murchayetva, vibrating. Adikatam, transcendental message. Gayamana, singing constantly. Chirami, do move. Aham, I. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Narada Muni speaking. And thus I travel, constantly singing the transcendental message of the glories of the Lord, vibrating this instrument called a veena, which is charged with transcendental sound and which was given to me by Lord Krishna. Purport. The musical stringed instrument called the veena, which was handed to Narada by Lord Krishna, is described in the Linga Purana, and this is confirmed by Srila Jiva Goswami. This transcendental instrument is identical with Lord Krishna and Narada because all of them are of the same transcendental category. Sound vibrated by the instrument cannot be material, and therefore the glories and pastimes which are broadcast by the instrument of Narada are also transcendental, without a tinge of material inebriety. The seven singing meters, namely Sa, Sadhya, Ra, Rishabha, Ga, Gandhara, Ma, Majima, Pa, Panchama, Da, Daivata, and Ni, Nishida, are also transcendental and specifically meant for transcendental songs. As a pure devotee of the Lord, Sri Narada Deva is always fulfilling his obligation to the Lord for his gift of the instrument. And thus, he is always engaged in singing his transcendental glories and is therefore infallible in his exalted position. Following in the footsteps of Sri Narada Muni, a self-realized soul in the material world also properly uses the sound meters, namely Sa, Ra, Ga, Ma, etc., in the service of the Lord by constantly singing his glories. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 14, the Mahatmas or great souls have no business in life except singing the transcendental glories of the Lord, following in the footsteps of Srila Narada Deva. Om Aginatamaram Dashajinanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamiena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanamano Vishtam Stapitamiena Bhutale Swayam Rupakaramayam Dirati Swapadantitam. So Srila Prabhupada says here in the purport that this musical instrument called the veena was given to Narada by Lord Krishna. It's described in the Linga Purana, and that's confirmed by Jiva Goswami. So I wasn't able to find anything. I wasn't able to reference that. I wasn't able to research it on the internet. I couldn't find anything about it. The closest thing I did find something that kind of bona fide, that gives us a little bit more information about the veena and Narada Muni's usage of it. And that was in a purport to a song called Narada Muni Bhaja Veenai. And the purport is by Srila Prabhupada. And let's see, maybe I'll read the translation too. When the great soul Narada Muni played his string veena, the holy name of Radhika Ramana descends and immediately appears amidst the kirtan of the Lord's devotees. I'll just read the purport. Prabhupada kind of, you get the translation from the purport. So this is Prabhupada's purport to that song. It says, this is a song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The purport of the song is that the great soul Narada Muni is playing his stringed instrument called the veena and vibrating Radhika Ramana, one of Krishna's names. As soon as he plucks the strings and chants, all the devotees immediately respond to him, and it becomes a very beautiful vibration. So, seems to me like two things are going on. From the purport, we gather that that instrument produces a transcendental sound vibration in and of itself. And even if Narada Muni didn't open his mouth, just plucking the string of the veena is producing a transcendental sound vibration that's, you know, potentially putting devotees into ecstasy. And on top of that, Narada Muni, who is a pure devotee, he's also chanting. So it's kind of like a 1-2 punch kind of thing. It's a double effect. Narada Muni's chanting is transcendental, and the sound vibration that's coming from the veena is also transcendental. So it goes, as soon as he plucks the strings and chants, all the devotees immediately respond to him, and it becomes a very beautiful vibration. Amiyadara Bhadi Shegana. As the singing goes on with the stringed instrument, it appears that there is a shower of nectar, and all the devotees then dance in ecstasy to the fullest extent of their satisfaction. Then, as they dance, it appears that they become intoxicated by drinking the beverage called Madhuri Pura. And as one becomes almost mad by drinking, similarly, all the devotees become mad in ecstasy. And some of them are crying. Some of them are dancing. Some of them, although they cannot dance publicly, are dancing within their hearts. Then Lord Shiva embraces Narada Muni and begins to dance and cry out in ecstasy. And when Lord Brahma sees Lord Shiva dancing with Narada Muni, he joins in and says, "All of you kindly chant, Hari Bol, Hari Bol." Then gradually the King of Heaven, Indra, also joins in with great satisfaction and begins to dance and chant, Hari Hari Bol. In this way, by the influence of the transcendental vibration of the holy name of God, the whole universe becomes ecstatic. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, "When the whole universe becomes ecstatic in this way, my desires are satisfied. I therefore pray to Rupa Goswami, unto the lotus feet of Rupa Goswami, that the chanting of Harinam may go on nicely like this." So that's something a little bit more about the veena. So Prabhupada here, after describing about the veena and the sound vibrations, you know, the seven singing meters, towards in the latter part of the purport, he talks about how devotees following in the footsteps of Narada Muni use these sound meters to constantly sing the glories of the Lord. And he refers to a verse from the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 9. Mahatmanas tumam partha daivim prakritim. No, wait. 9:14 is Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantas cha dridavritaha namasyas namasyantam chamam nicham tushanti charmati. You get it right? Namasyantas chamam bhaksha nicha yukti upashate. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. So Prabhupada, since he mentions that verse here in the purport, I'm going to read the translation and purport. I've read the translation. I'm going to read the purport to that, because he mentions twice in this, and towards the end of the purport, how these Mahatmas are following in the footsteps of Narada Devi. So let's get some, by reading this purport, we're going to get some further insight into what Prabhupada means by Mahatma. You know, what Prabhupada's understanding is of Mahatma. What are the qualifications or the qualities of a Mahatma? So, and as Prabhupada says, the Mahatma cannot be manufactured by rubber stamping an ordinary man. His symptoms are described here. A Mahatma is always engaged in chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead. He has no other business. So that seems to be the first and foremost qualification, that he's always glorifying Krishna. Nothing else. He's always engaged in glorification of the Lord. He repeats it. In other words, he is not an impersonalist. When the question of glorification is there, one has to glorify the Supreme Lord, praising his holy name, his eternal form, his transcendental qualities, and his uncommon pastimes. One has to glorify all these. Therefore, Mahatma is attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who is attached to the impersonal feature of the Supreme Lord, the Brahma Jyoti, is not described as Mahatma in the Bhagavad Gita. He is described in a different way in the next verse. The Mahatma is always engaged in different activities of devotional service as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing and chanting about Vishnu, not a demigod or a human being. That is devotion. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, Smaranam, remembering him. Such a Mahatma has firm determination to achieve at the ultimate end the association of the Supreme Supreme Lord in any one of the five transcendental rasas. To achieve that success, he engages all activities, mental, bodily, and vocal, everything in the service of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. That is called full Krishna consciousness. In devotional service, there are certain activities which are called determined, such as fasting on certain days, like the 11th day of the moon, Ekadasi, and on the appearance day of the Lord. All these rules and regulations are offered by the great acharyas for those who are actually interested in getting admission into the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the transcendental world. The Mahatmas, great souls, strictly observe all these rules and regulations, and therefore they are sure to achieve the desired result. As described in the second verse of this chapter, not only is this devotional service easy, but it can be performed in a happy mood. One does not need to undergo any severe penance and austerity. He can live this life in devotional service, guided by an expert spiritual master. And in any position, either as a householder or a sannyasi or a brahmachari, in any position, and anywhere in the world, he can perform this devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus become actually Mahatma, a great soul. So this gives us some further insight in what it means to be a Mahatma. So this is what we want. You know, we want to follow in the footsteps of Narada Muni and become Mahatma. So how does one become a Mahatma? Well, we just heard a lot of information there. But just like in the material world, if you want to become a doctor, you go to a medical school, right? If you want to become a lawyer, you go to law school. Yeah. So if you want to become a Mahatma, you got to go to a Mahatma school. So where do you find the Mahatma school? Right? Yeah. This is a Mahatma school. Bet you never thought of it like that. Just like you got a law school for, you know, somebody wants to become a lawyer, or a medical school for somebody who wants to become a doctor. Somebody wants to become a Mahatma, you got to go to a Mahatma school. This is a Mahatma school. That's what this is. This is a Mahatma school. And just like in schools, you got, you know, different courses and so forth and so on. Well, first of all, no school, in every school you have to have a principal. So we have the principal of the Mahatma school, Suhas Prabhu, is our Mahatma school principal. And we have like Professor Dhrutakarma and Professor Amala Bhakta. And we have the superintendent of schools, Bhadrinarayana. You could take that analogy and just do a lot of things with it. But this is a Mahatma school. Because you come here to learn how to be a Mahatma. Just like you go to medical school to learn how to be a doctor, you go to law school to learn how to be a lawyer. So, and just like when you go to school, you got to take it seriously. You can go to school, but if you don't take it seriously, you're not going to learn anything. I did that. I went to school, I didn't take it seriously, and I didn't learn very much. But if you plug in, it's a great opportunity. You know, you could learn about this and that and this and that. And if you take the whole thing seriously, you know, you get good grades and all, you graduate, you get a degree, and you know, you're somebody. You did something, you accomplished something, you achieved something. So same thing. This is a Mahatma school, and we have to apply ourselves. You know, we have the Mangal Arati course, and then we have the Tulsi course, then we have the Japa course, and we have the Srimad Bhagavatam class. You know, it's just like in school, you take different subjects, right? And there's different departments. You know? So it's the same thing. We have to, just like when a student wants to be successful, he has to really apply himself. He has to go to the classes. He has to do the homework. He has to write the papers. He has to study for the exams, all that thing. And then, hopefully, if he does all that, most likely he'll do well and he gets good grades and he graduates and he gets a degree. So same thing here. We shouldn't, just like a student doesn't expect to learn and advance if he doesn't apply himself. So in the same way, we shouldn't expect to, learn and advance if we don't apply ourselves. We've got to apply ourselves. Really important. And so another thing, though, is like with the schools that A lot of times the students have a really good experience when they go to the school. And even when they graduate, you know, at that point they're called an alumni. And they support it. A lot of these schools, especially the private schools, they're supported by the people who went there and really felt like they got a lot out of it. It was a really great experience for them. And so they give donations to see the school continue and develop and like that. And so that's important too. We're meant to do that. We're meant to try to be come to this school to try to become Mahatmas. And then we're trying to, you know, try to help other people become Mahatmas. That's part of the coursework. And also to support the Mahatma school in whatever way we can. You know, that's really important. I mean, imagine what Los Angeles would be like without New Dwarka. It'd be like a desert. This is like an oasis in the spiritual desert, New Dwarka. And somebody could say, oh, you know, Prabhupada, and this is true, they say Prabhupada separately incorporated the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust and the temples, ISKCON, because in the event that something went wrong with ISKCON, the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust would still continue. You know, his books would still be separately done. So it's, you know, if one failed, then the other wouldn't be part of it. But, you know, okay, that's there. But imagine what it would be like, once again, if there wasn't temples. It would be very hard to be Krishna conscious in any kind of a significant way. I mean, you'd really be struggling if you're out there on your own and just had Prabhupada's books and didn't have the opportunity to associate with devotees and, you know, participate in all these wonderful activities that we do every day. So we should be very grateful. You know, in addition to, you know, plugging in and taking the whole opportunity very seriously, we should be very grateful that we're here, that we're even, you know, that there's such a thing exists and we're allowed to be part of it. One day I went to USC, just to give you an example of like how some people are grateful. I went to USC to distribute books. This was back a few years ago. And it just happened to be a day, like the convocation, I think it was like, you know, the graduation ceremony, or maybe it was either the end of the semester or the beginning of the semester, I can't remember. And so they had the campus like set up with a whole bunch of chairs and stuff like that, because, you know, a lot of people were coming who weren't students, parents and so forth, alumni. And this fellow who is the MC, he made an announcement that some alumni who wanted to remain anonymous gave a $130 million donation. So I thought, whoa, that's pretty nice. Well, for them. But just to give you an idea, it's like it's a perverted reflection of what, you know, what we should be feeling. In other words, like he was so grateful, he thought, wow, USC did so much for me, I have to really do something in return. So I think it's, you know, we can try to have that kind of a feeling towards the Mahatma schools, the ISKCON Mahatma schools. We really want to try to, you know, give something back. We're getting a lot here by having this opportunity. And on the point of plugging in, you know, Navina Nirita was giving class a couple of days ago, I guess it was, and he was talking about how when you do Sankirtan, seriously, book distribution, seriously, you really get in the zone. And that's true. You know, I've experienced that. It's not cheap. You know, you really got to surrender to have that experience. Otherwise, it can feel like, what's the word? Mechanical, monotonous, laborious. You know, you're just doing the same, saying the same thing over and over again. If when you really surrender to it, you transcend the material aspect of the activity that is, you know, just a very kind of simple activity. And you actually experience, as he was saying, being used as Krishna's instrument to engage conditioned souls in devotional service. But as I said, you got to experience that, you got to be really surrendered. That's a reward for somebody who's really taking the whole thing very seriously and really applying themselves to it. But my point is that just like that experience is there for somebody who really surrenders to book distribution, that experience is there for somebody who just really surrenders to sadhana bhakti, you know, to what we're doing here. And it's not like you just get in the zone when you're out on Sankirtan. You do get on the zone. You can get in the zone when you're out on Sankirtan. But you could also get in the zone right here. And it's not like you got to be a Sankirtan devotee to experience entering into the internal potency of the Lord and experiencing, you know, getting realization and higher taste. And that can happen even right here in basic training. I've experienced that too. You know? Once again, same thing, same goes. It's the same price. You got to be really serious. It's not, if you do it half pie, that's a, then you're not going to, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. You don't take off. You know, it's like you got to be really give it, you know, giving it everything you got. So that's a good thing. We have to remind ourselves of that. That, you know, it's like right here. Otherwise, why would Prabhupada say something like, and I've mentioned this before in previous classes I've given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he goes, how he's talking about how Haridasa Thakur was chanting the Hare Krishna mantra with a vow before Tulsi, and he was chanting like 300,000 names daily. And Prabhupada mentions, well, we can't imitate Haridasa Thakur, but we can follow in his footsteps by chanting the Maha mantra with a vow before the Tulsi. And he says, simply by doing this, one can become spiritually strong. And he says, the process has immense spiritual potency. One should not miss this opportunity. Yeah. So, you know, why would he say something like that? In other words, I mean, my analysis of that is it means what he's saying is it's an experience to be had. You know, if you plug in, if you get into it and do it seriously, just like, you know, he was saying, Navino was saying about Sankirtan, there's an experience to be had there if you really surrender to it. You feel, you go into the zone and you feel yourself being used as Krishna's instrument. So in the same way, there's an experience to be had for somebody who really surrenders and to these basic things that we're doing every day. It's not just like some ritual or something like that. You just, okay, you got to do this. No, it's like if we really do it with enthusiasm and, you know, determination, dedicating ourselves to it, then we could experience the getting onto the transcendental platform just as a result of performing these activities. All of them. Chanting, japa, the kirtans, even, you know, the class and everything like that. So, let's see. I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah. Didn't have a lot to say today.
Hare Krishna. One thing's come in my mind. You know, when Prabhupada said then he separates ISKCON from BBT, there is like two differences. So if, for example, everybody from ISKCON go away, BBT will stay. Usually, you know, you can say like that, like probably all ISKCON can go away, and what can happen also, all BBT can go away. Can ISKCON be without BBT? Because books is in BBT.
If all the BBT workers, I don't know. I never heard that. Maybe Savas would like to comment on that. You know, I heard it said that if Prabhupada incorporated the BBT and ISKCON as two separate things, because if ISKCON went down, the BBT would still be there and his books would still be going. So Prem is asking the question, what if BBT goes down? What if all the BBT devotees stop? And will ISKCON still go on?
Yeah, that's a good question, but it's like, and Papa never addressed that, but he did say what you said previously, that yes, they're separated. But I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think we're going to see that. That would be a very, you know, extreme situation. But I don't think that ISKCON's going to go down, and neither is the BBT. The whole purpose of that statement was to just show that they're two different entities. And Papa was making a point that even if someone doesn't help him, these books will continue on for the next 10,000 years. Those will be the law books for society for the next 10,000 years. So I don't particularly think those are all pretty much hypothetical things that might happen. It's you know, we won't live around to see that day.
Yeah, but thank you. I agree with you. And that reminds me of a point I was thinking about and I forgot to make that. You know, so I was saying how this is a Mahatma school. And I think that to a certain extent it's a successful Mahatma school because, at least in my opinion, it's producing some Mahatmas. I mean, I could, if I had to sit down, I think Prabhupada had, 4,000 disciples or whatever he had. I don't know the number. It was something there in the 4,000 or 5,000. But I could probably write a list of, you know, 40 or 50 devotees that I, in my unqualified opinion, I thought I was, I'd have to say this person's a Mahatma. I mean, he's just talking about Krishna all the time. He's dedicating his whole life to doing that, traveling around or even staying in one place. And I mean, it seems like it's working to me. There are some Mahatmas who are being produced as, you know, who are coming out of this Mahatma school. You know, some people are coming out, you know, winding up Mahatmas.
You know, and regardless of what we think, this movement's pressing on its own accord.
Yeah.
I mean, people are joining all over the place. They're actually in small little cities, little villages, and There's something somebody just said to me that right now in ISKCON there's 75,000 initiated devotees that they know of. 75,000. That's a pretty big chunk. And let's face it, most of us, like yourself and myself, we're to the stage where we have a limited amount of days left on this planet, and we're probably closer to leaving this planet. But the most of the people that are coming on board the Krishna consciousness are sometimes, you know, 40 years our junior, or 30 years our junior. And those individuals will be devotees for the rest of their life, and they'll teach other people. So I don't think there's going to be any lack of devotees or lack of Krishna consciousness or a lack of Prabhupada's books.
Thank you.
We have to stop people from trying to print their books on their own. You know, the BBT finds more problems with individuals in different places trying to print Srila Prabhupada books on their own. Then we do that, you know, we don't have enough books.
John. Shamakund.
In the beginning of the ISKCON, like, Srila Prabhupada always was asking the devotees to first go and distribute the books, and from the distribution of books, all the temples have been built and all the money was generated in the beginning. So it appears to me that BBT is like the root of the tree, and the temples and all the other facilities are like branches and the leaves. So when the tree is drying, so sometimes, you know, the last one to go down is the root. So that's what we see in the past. Like, Prabhupada always was asking even Rameshwar Prabhu and others that first distribute books, and from that money the temples have come. So if, you know, after 10,000 years or more, if something goes down, then, you know, the BBT will be always the root of that tree. So BBT has to be the last one. Also, I remember that there is a Prabhu Jivadar. So he heard Prabhupada say that don't stop distributing these books, because one day the temples may go away, one day all the facilities may go away, you know, after many, many years. But do not stop printing the books, because even after so many thousands of years, somebody may find a book and then he may again start everything.
Interesting. Who is the source of that?
Jivadar. He comes here, Jivadar Prabhu.
Okay. Well, okay. Anyway, on that note, I mean, there is that pastime where Prabhupada was walking with his spiritual master, and Bhaktisiddhanta. And Bhaktisiddhanta said actually when we were living back in Ultadunga, back they had a place, a small temple in Calcutta. He said we were living very peacefully, and if we were collecting, I forget what it was, some small amount of rupees, everything was. But then this person donated a lot of money, and they built this big marble temple at Bagh Bazar, and Bhaktisiddhanta was lamenting that. But it's all the disciples now are competing for who gets what room, and it's a big problem. He said, actually, if I could, I would sell the marble for this temple and print books. So that Prabhupada took that. He imbibed that mood that this is really important. Don't focus on the temple, building temples, and just get to make sure the book thing happens, and I think other things will come as a result of that. So on that note, yeah. Anybody else have any questions or comments? Okay, thank you very much. Guntraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you.